Ariana.
Hi, Vanessa.
Thank you for meeting me in Women of Harry Potter Land again.
It's my favorite place.
Today we've decided to meet above the clouds because it is so hot and humid in Boston.
You know, I spent my whole childhood in airplanes wishing that we could just stay and frolic above the clouds. I'm so glad that I finally fulfilled that fantasy for myself. Who are you blessing today?
I am blessing Pansy Parkinson.
What an interesting choice.
So I'm blessing her because I look at her and I think, there by the grace of God go I.
And what do you mean by that?
I mean, I think that who you are in high school is a product of so many random things. And I would hate to be judged by who I was in high school. And we have no sense of the person she turns out to be. And she is a monster in high school. She, like, day one is a bully. And then at the end of book seven is a pureblood supremacist coward who, like, walks away from the battle.
Right. And she tries to hand Harry over to Voldemort at the end of the book.
Yes. She's like, Harry should go and save all of us. I think she's motivated by several things. I think she's in part in love with Draco and, like, wants to do anything to get this boy's attention. I think that she gets sorted into Slytherin, which is a really toxic environment right now. Like, the children of at least three Death Eaters are in Slytherin right now. Although we never find out that her parents are Death Eaters, right? We never hear the name Parkinson listed among the Death Eaters.
Yeah, I don't think we know anything about her family or background.
I think, like, having a crush on a boy who strings you along and having, like, mean friends. And I think that most teenagers can just sort of fall into the wrong crowd and you're trying to figure out your personality and who you want to be. And I just think that I could have just as easily been Pansy Parkinson as the person I was in high school. And I guess I want to bless her because I really, really hope that she comes out the other side of this.
Yeah, I think what's so interesting about Pansy to me is exactly what you're pointing to, which is that she's so young and, like, we see her. And it's easy for us to see her as a creature of her circumstance in Slytherin, in the friend group that she's in. I think revisiting her, I am struck by how many parallels for me there are between Pansy and Bellatrix, that she, like, holds all of that ugliness inside of her. And it brings us back to this question that I think we've been grappling with reading Harry Potter, which is, at what point do we hold people accountable? And at what point do we forgive people for the circumstances that they are in? Like, I think with Pansy, it's easier for me to say she's a child. Like, we don't know where she's going to end up. And we see her in Slytherin surrounded by this toxicity. And, like, if only she could have some positive influence, she could be better. But with Bellatrix, it's so much harder for me to say, well, she was raised in this wizard supremacist household. Like, we know those things to be true about her, but it is so much harder for me to interrogate her evil as it appears and to forgive her and to imagine myself into Bellatrix. So I love that Pansy gives us that opportunity to grapple with that.
There was an episode of the podcast, The Daily, that grappled with almost exactly this question, which was the, like, godson of David Duke and the son of a white supremacist who's now very progressive and, like, involved in all sorts of race activism and immigration activism and very anti-Trump. And him telling the story of, like, this opportunity of going to college and just, like, meeting a Jewish person who was like, let's break this down, right? Like, it can often be as simple as that. It can be, if Pansy goes back and thinks through who Hermione was and the way that she treated her, and if Hermione and Pansy have lunch together, like, I really do believe it is as simple as that.
Yeah, I think we still have the capacity to forgive Pansy because what she's doing is terrible. She's, like, bullying Neville right off the bat. But I think it also makes me sad for her, because of the way that she falls deeper and deeper into this. Like, in that first book, she could just be a nasty, nasty 11-year-old and then be a better 12-year-old and then become, we know in that book that she was friends with Parvati and Padma before Hogwarts because they're on first name basis with each other right off the bat. So, like, if she had been friends with Parvati instead of with Draco, like, her life could have taken this different direction, and it still can.
We also know that Snape, in part because he's a double agent, like, fans these flames within the Slytherins. And so I also think that this is a failure of Hogwarts and that Snape is constantly encouraging the other Slytherins to beat up on Neville and on Harry and like without any consequences, and to mock Hermione's looks without any consequences.
He's not just encouraging them. He's doing those things himself.
Yeah, he's modeling it for them.
Of course, on top of Draco and Snape, there's Umbridge. There's Umbridge, who puts her in the Inquisitorial squad and like pits her and Draco and all of the Slytherins against the other students. So there's like this intense us versus them mentality that is being cultivated through her. Of course, she receives that and then perpetuates that.
I just think that because she's a child, she is a victim as much as she is a perpetrator.
Yeah, I had never seen that. I had seen her relationship with Draco and how much Draco had encouraged that with her and how much her desire to be his girlfriend and to be like close to the light that is Draco Malfoy. And I hadn't seen how Snape, the head of her house, her mentor, was modeling all of the things that she steps into. And so I honestly don't know how we expect Pansy to be any different than how she is in this book. I think what's interesting for me in this contemplation is thinking about the people who were mean to me in high school.
Right.
Because I still think at this age, I look at people's Facebook pages and want them to be doing badly if they were bullies in high school. I want there to be some kind of universal justice where if you were on top and mean as a high schooler, there has been some great retribution and the balance of the world has shifted. And now they're suffering somehow or getting their comeuppance. And I know that to be like a nasty little feeling in me, but I don't feel like I like overly interrogate that or like stop myself in those moments and think like, no, I just hope that they have learned and are happy now.
First of all, I don't think we're asking Neville or Hermione to reconcile with Pansy. I think that Pansy was an abusive bully to them, and I would never expect them to get back into relationship with her. But I think because I was never a victim of Pansy, she can be this opportunity for me to be like, okay, like what grudges do I hold from childhood? Or at what point do I want to hold people responsible? And what is justice for what people do, in my opinion, sort of before they're 25 and their brains are fully formed, right? Like, I think that Neville is probably traumatized by Pansy, right? And so I think all I want to do is open up a space for self-forgiveness of who I was in high school. And I was a nerdy kid who was bullied in some ways in high school. And I think I also just want to open up the possibility that maybe those people are different now.
Yeah. Yeah, I think what we haven't gotten to is your opening statement that, like, I could be Pansy. And I think, you know, like, because I really hope I don't think that I was a bully in middle school or high school, it's hard for me to imagine myself specifically into Pansy. But what I can imagine is kind of the blind faith that she puts in her values and her friend group and her mentors. And I think every child does that. And I had a certain set of values that I'm sure that I imposed on my peers without thinking critically about where those things came from. And it happened to be that those values served me a little bit better in life than the values that Pansy was given served her. But everybody does that. And it was just luck that the ones that I was given early on were not the ones that Pansy was given early on.
Right. I remember somebody saying to me in high school, we were having some sort of political conversation. And he said to me, are these your opinions or your parents' opinions? And I felt so called out because they were my parents' opinions. I doubt that his were any different than his parents' opinions. But, right, like, all we are is our parents' and our peers' opinions at that age. And it's just echo chambers of us trying to figure out who we are. And I actually do think that to some extent that has changed in the last several years because of the internet. I am so impressed by young people now and the way that they are sort of, like, teaching up. And there were ways that I did that. I think I was like much more progressive on LGBTQ rights as a teenager than my parents were. And they were very receptive to me communicating that. But other than that, I was just a vessel for like their opinions.
Yeah. And I would say I was the same way. But I think I was more progressive on queer issues because I had queer friends, because that was my friend group in high school.
Me too.
So like the fact is that Pansy's friends are wizard supremacists, and theoretically, we think maybe her family were wizard supremacists, and Snape is modeling that too. Like, where is she supposed to get other influences?
And she could, right? I don't want to say that she's off scot-free. She could reach out to Hermione. She could, right? Like, she could do any number of things. She says a heinous thing about Ginny, who, like, Ginny is, like, the epitome of the cool girl and is a pureblood, right? Like, there would be a way into a relationship with Ginny, and she doesn't take it.
Yeah, I think, though, so the thing that she says about Ginny, it's about her attractiveness, I think, yeah. If I remember correctly. And I remember that moment because she's, like, laying in Draco's lap, and she's asking her boyfriends if they're attracted to Ginny. And I see such insecurity in her in that moment. And I think that's another thing that we have to grapple with is, like, when it comes to mean girls in high school settings, like, there's so much insecurity at the root of how girls are pitted against one another.
Yeah. And the other thing is, right, of course she's insecure. I mean, the only description of how she looks that we really get is that she's described as pug-faced. And, like, that is not a generous description of how somebody looks at all. And then also, like, the way that her dress is described at the Yule Ball is, like, pink and frilly in a way that we're not supposed to, like, take as, like, beautiful in any way, right? That it's supposed to be over the top. And, you know, people quite often say that the books are from Harry's perspective. And I want to push back on that because so many chapters happen without Harry being in the room, which I think us being in book six has really called my attention to. We have this, the two ministers chapter, and we have Snape, Narcissa, and Bellatrix. And, like, this is clearly more than just Harry's perspective, the narration. The world of the books judges Pansy by her looks. And so, of course, she's insecure. I don't know. Being a high school girl is awful.
Yeah, and I imagine that that's part of the reason that she's imposing those things onto the women around her as well, right? We see her, like, really laughing at Hermione when she gets those buck teeth and judging Ginny, as we were just talking about, that, like, this standard that is being imposed on her gets, like, processed through her and put on the young girls around her. And we know that that's how it often works for young women, that it is because of the judgment that we feel that we are receiving that we impose that judgment on others.
Right. The moment, I mean, there's so many moments where she's terrible, but the moment that I'm like, oh, Pansy, if I knew you, I would never be able to forgive you, is when she makes fun of Angelina Johnson's hair. She says that it looks like worms are coming out of her hair, which is just clearly blatant racism. And she's racist in other ways within the universe of the books, too. You know, like, she calls people mudbloods and mudblood-loving. And yeah, I just guess I want to bless young people and the fact that, like, you can change at any age, right? But I just really want to open, I want to keep that door wide, wide open on somebody who we never hear from again after they're 17.
Yeah, I think the damage is real. What Pansy is doing is really damaging to the people around her. She is inflicting racism and wizard supremacy, and that will go on to shape the people around her in the same way that she is being shaped. And, like, just as she has this great capacity to be changed and to grow, like, she is changing the people around her. And I don't want to diminish the way in which she's being incredibly hurtful and toxic.
If you imagine a person's life as a room that they fill with, like, good deeds and bad deeds, I think that when they're young, there is a huge door where they can, like, let other things in and sort of, like, walk through the door and let that just be one room of the house of their lives. And I think that as people get older, that door gets smaller and smaller, and the acts of change that they have to demonstrate, right? Like, in order for someone to have done something terrible and then at 50 be like, oh my God, I was wrong, I think that they have to work a lot harder to get through those doors. But I just want that door to be huge for Pansy.
I'm just wondering, not because I disagree with you, but because it's playing in my head, what we make of this, which I believe that people can change, that we can be totally different as children and young adults as we are from adults, and we can redeem ourselves and live different lives, from the kind of arguments that were being made around Brock Turner during his trial, which is a very similar, like, he was so young, he made a mistake, but he has his whole life ahead of him to be different kind of argument.
Yeah. So the problem with Brock Turner is I don't think that the problem with Brock Turner is that the judge said that. I think the problem with Brock Turner is that the judge wouldn't have said that if Brock Turner was black and wasn't at Stanford, because I think that that is true of Brock Turner. I think that he needs to be taught that he needs to be taught that raping women is terrible and held to account, like it is a crime. But my problem isn't with giving young people a second chance. My problem is that it's only for rich white people that that happens.
Right. Brock Turner has a certain entitlement to the privileges that have already been handed to him and that he should continue to have those privileges.
Right. And that, you know, white kids who go to Stanford deserve second chances because of all the possibilities. But a black kid from Oakland would not get that same offer. And so I think that it's really easy for us to hate Pansy. And I'm like, no, all young people deserve second chances. I don't think Pansy's just going to change on a dime, but I think that Hogwarts failed her.
And that we don't need to be handing Pansy Parkinson like total immunity and privilege. We can hold her accountable for the things that she says and does in these books and also believe in her capacity to change and grow.
Right. Like, I'm talking about truth and reconciliation committees. I'm talking about McGonagall saying you will not graduate unless you have heartfelt apologies for these people. And everybody who you have wronged has a chance to come and confront you about what you did. And I don't think that it should be like, if Pansy is nice to one person later today, we're going to be like, oh, she's the capacity. Like, I think that it has to be earned. But I want us to believe that all young people can change and not just believe it. Work with them, right? Like, again, like, I just think this is a major institutional failure as well. So, yeah, I don't think that Pansy shouldn't be held accountable. I just think that we should leave open the opportunity that she might change. And I don't think that Brock Turner shouldn't have this follow him around for the rest of his life. And I don't think that Pansy shouldn't have this follow her around for the rest of her life. I just think that we should, yeah, leave open the possibility and hold ourselves accountable for the ways that young people change.
And give them the tools to change.
Exactly. It's on us. Yeah, so I think the reason that I framed my blessing for Pansy is there by the grace of God go I, is because I think that if I hadn't had my parents and my mentors and, you know, like a teacher who pulled me aside in 10th grade and handed me Pride and Prejudice and, right, like, just a lot of people who showed me so much love and care and compassion and patience. And I don't see any of that in Pansy's life. And all I see in her life is models of bullying and hate. And so I really do believe that I was sort of an empty enough shell that I could have quite easily have been Pansy. I want to bless her for the fact that she doesn't have any better mentors or peers, and that it's going to be a long uphill battle for her to try to become a better person, but I hope she finds a way.
Absolutely. Okay, so I have a quiz for you.
Thank God.
The later Harry Potter books exist in this landscape of a particular cultural obsession that we had in the early 2000s, which was with bullying among specifically teen and preteen girls.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember this super small indie film called Mean Girls.
I just watched it over the weekend.
I think that's a model for a new kind of villain that emerges in our landscape of American and I guess British high school drama, which is the villainous, beautiful queen bee girl, which I think Pansy falls into. In fact, the movie Mean Girls was based on the book Queen Bees and Wannabes by Rosalind Wiseman. I remember so vividly my mom having that book and like having it on the counter. I don't think I ever read it, but it was like definitely something that she was consulting as I was growing up. And Wiseman taught seminars about girl-on-girl aggression and what she called girl world. My questions for you are about Wiseman and her book.
Great.
Which is not a term that Wiseman used to classify players in her so-called girl world. A, climbers, girls just trying to get from one click to the next. B, RMG, really mean girls. C, bankers, who are the keepers of information and gossip. D, fruit cup girls who pretend that they're not able to open things like fruit cups for boys' attention.
I think fruit cup girls is something that you made up.
No, that is one of her actual types of girls.
Which one's fake? RMG?
Climbers is fake.
Oh, that you came up with that?
She has a framework for talking about the ways in which girls move up, but she does not have a term for it.
Good on you, you trickster.
Thanks. Just moving up in the world by being tricky and manipulative like all young girls are. Why did Rosalind Weissman start her course? A, her younger sister was being picked on in school, and so she felt moved to investigate the culture around that. B, she started an organization that taught self-defense to women and girls, but found that more girls were complaining about each other than about boys. C, her PhD was on the psychology of young women's eating disorders and discovered other problems after doing research in middle school classrooms. Or D, she herself was a mean alpha girl in school, and after a girl she picked on wrote her an email explaining how she'd made her life miserable, she set out to reform the culture.
I'm going to say D because I want it to be true, because then it's true that people change and are motivated by past wrongs to be better people.
Unfortunately, no, it's B. She had an organization for self-defense, and the girls were just talking about each other instead of men who were picking on them. It is partially true in that she was an alpha queen bee girl when she was in high school, and part of her work around that is based on her experience.
Okay. See? Pansy can change.
Okay. Question three. What kind of tools did instructors originally turn to at the beginning of trying to solve this problem of girl meanness? A, research on bonobo matriarchal societies and hierarchies. B, analysis of cattiness in reality TV. C, toolkits on dismantling racism. D, data on drug addiction and abuse.
A.
Here's the thing about bonobos. They are in matriarchal societies, and I have a quote for you. Quote, female bonobos make really strong friendships with other females. Forming cohorts, they use their collective power to control food and dominate males. Bonobos are so great. That is not what we used to originally talk about young women.
What did we use?
Actually, toolkits on dismantling racism. And
oh, that makes me so uncomfortable.
It's interesting what I read. All of my quizzes based on this New York Times article from 2002, which is Girls Just Want to Be Mean. It says, instructors would not let comments like, we have groups, but we all get along stand. They would deconstruct them. Quote, most often the popular students made these comments while the students who are not as high in the social hierarchy disagree. The comments by the popular students reveal how those who have privilege are so accustomed to their own power that they don't recognize when they are dominating and silencing others. It's nothing like racism, but like the language around power and oppression, I think. Anyway, we've moved on from that.
No, that's really interesting.
Okay, last question. Question four, which is not a real teen quote from the Girls Just Want to Be Mean article in the New York Times. A, this girl speaking about her older sister. She's always telling me to look inside myself and be true to myself. Things I can't do right now because I'm too shallow and superficial. B, talking about a voicemail she'd left on her friend's parents' phone. She said, hello, it's me. Have you gotten your pregnancy test back yet? C, in a public apology note, I once even compared your forehead/face to a minefield, only to one person, though. I'm really sorry I said these things, even though I might still believe them. D, about her mom, I need to not look like her at 40, so I have to start dieting now.
How much fun did you have writing this?
Only one of them isn't real.
I know. How much fun did you have writing the fake one?
I had fun.
Okay. I think the pregnancy one is a trick you would play.
That is real.
God, which one did you make up?
The dieting one about her mom.
Oh, interesting. Especially interesting because your mom is so beautiful and you know it.
I know.
The best thing you could do is look like your mom.
That is not something I would have said as a teenager, but I was super aware of weight and dieting culture as a teen, so I was trying to check into that mindset again. Anyway, Pansy Parkinson, kind of model for this queen bee obsession that we had.
She gets interviewed by the Daily Prophet to be a queen bee. Like she, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Thank you for that wonderful quiz, Ariana, pointing to a very dated element in our thinking about young women.
Absolutely.
I think that to our point, though, the datedness of this article reveals our capacity for change. The New York Times would never publish an article like this now.
I mean, I think bullying still happens in schools, and I think women, young girls, are perpetuators of bullying as much as young men are. But I think the kind of rhetoric that was surrounding the mean girl fixation I hope that we have moved away from.
Yeah. Well, this has been an episode of The Women of Harry Potter. We're a production of Not Sorry Productions, produced by Ariana Nettleman, me, Vanessa Zoltan, and Chelsea Erson, and our music is by Nick Bohl. And we will talk to you in 2 weeks.